This is a standalone sermon. We've got this sermon kind of we've been preaching. We nearly always preach series, as you know. But we finished up this series on children, and we've got this sermon before the youth concert next week. And I was just reading through my Bible, and I fell upon what is arguably my favorite passage, Paul's little letter to the Philippians. You can read the whole thing. If you've never read Philippians, go home and read it. You read the whole thing in 15 minutes. It maybe is the most inspiring 15 minutes of reading that you'll find in the New Testament. And I've often said that if I were going to have just one little piece of text, one paragraph, if I were stuck on a desert island from the New Testament, this would be a contender. It might be it. Paul's letter to the Philippians, chapter 4, verses 4 through 7. See if you can find the four words. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say, rejoice. Let your gentleness be known to everyone. To everyone. The Lord is near. That looks like four words. Do not worry about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving. I think it's in Colossians where Paul says, in all circumstances, give thanks. If you want a really good hint to the practice of Christian faith, you think about that word thanksgiving. Before you ask God for something, give God thanks for all the goodness in your life. Thanksgiving always comes first. You'll see it consistently in Paul. That's not what we're preaching on today, but there's a little mini sermon. I'm going to charge extra for that one. And supplication with thanksgiving, let your request be known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. A number of years ago, a friend of mine who's a member of the church, it seems like this was 5 or 6 years ago, but time is flying for me, so it's probably 18 or 19 or 20 years ago. But for some reason, I always remember this. It was about this time of the year, and he came up to me and he said, Don, are you a mountain person or an ocean person? And I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, when you get ready to go on vacation, do you go to the mountains or to the oceans? Are you a mountain person or are you an ocean person? Everybody's one or the other. I said, both. Both. I need them both. And so you might figure out that one of the reasons I thought about that is because I'm getting ready at the end of the month. Wouldn't miss the youth concert at all, but I'm getting ready. Bobby and I are going to take 10 days to go on vacation, and it's going to be both. We're going to turn our car east and drive 500 miles to the coast, and then when we get back, we're going to have one day of rest. We're going to turn the car west and drive 500 miles to the mountains. I just need them both. There's something extraordinary I think about the ocean. There's the sound of the ocean, sleeping to the sound of the ocean. I leave the windows open. It's extraordinary. The smell of salt air, the infinity of the horizon at the ocean, the sound of the waves. There's something about the ocean where I feel extraordinarily close and near to God. And then the mountains. The mountains are different, but in the same way, I feel close to God in the mountains. The majesty of the mountains, the subtlety of the clouds and the shadows in the mountains, the high mountain desert air, the coolness of the night. There's just something special about the mountains. And so a lot of you have been or getting ready to go on vacation. You know, we tend to go to those places and love those places where we feel close to God. But I'm not sure that's what Paul was talking about in this text. Let's look at it again. In case you didn't get it the first time, we bolded those four words. Paul says, rejoice in the Lord always. He says, again, I will say, rejoice, let your gentleness be known to everyone. The Lord is near. Now, I don't know about you, but when I read those words, I don't hear Paul saying the Lord is near when you're at the ocean. It doesn't seem like he's saying the Lord is near when you go to the lake. I don't think he's saying the Lord is near when you're high up in the mountains. Or the Lord is near when you're on a river cruise. Paul appears to be saying the Lord is near. And I'm in the habit of just taking his word for it. You can bring it down now, it's okay. I just believe that Paul meant exactly what he said, that the Lord is near. That the Lord is near when you're at the ocean, the Lord is near when you're in the mountains, but that the Lord is near when you're stuck in traffic. Imagine that. The Lord is near when somebody is blasting their horn at you. The Lord is near when you're in your cubicle at work. The Lord is near when you go to happy hour after work. The Lord is near when you have the unhappy assignment of letting someone go. The Lord is near when you have the even unhappier experience of being the one who is losing his or her job for whatever reason. It's really, really easy for us to think about the nearness of God when we think about the way we feel in certain times and places, the way we feel when we see the birth of our child or our grandchild, the way we feel in those extraordinary moments when everything comes together, whether we're with a family on a reunion, we see the people we love, when everything's going well. But the extraordinary thing about the gospel, really, it's a mind-boggling, mind-blowing thing about the gospel, is the teaching of Paul, and you can see it throughout the Old Testament and the New Testament, that the Lord is near in all circumstances. And I don't think there's a single person that would disagree with me on this. If you and I were to understand this, I mean, we tend to read through these words, zip through them like we're reading a novel. We don't even hear how powerful and life-transforming they are. And even if we study them carefully, it's so difficult to live by them completely every single day. But there's not a person here today that would not agree with me that if we were to come to the conclusion and allow ourselves to be completely taken up in the understanding that the Lord is near in all occasions, good and bad, that it would transform, it would change our lives forever. So I've just come to the conclusion that these four simple words that contain so much of the gospel for you and me, these four simple words that are so easy for us to remember and in some ways fairly easy to understand, nevertheless, I've come to the conclusion that these are the four most difficult words in the world for us to live by day in and day out, month in and month out, all year long. The Lord is near. As is so often the case, I think we can turn to what I have come to believe is the central story of the Old Testament in order to understand this more clearly. When I look at the Old Testament, I see the first three or four chapters of Genesis. I don't think you can understand the human being. I don't think you can understand creation without reading carefully those first four chapters of Genesis. They tell us a lot. And then, of course, the story of faith, the beginning of the journey, Abraham and Sarah there in the 12th chapter of Genesis going forward. But maybe the central story of faith in the Old Testament is the story of the Hebrews in the wilderness. And you know the story. Moses is out there in the middle of nowhere. He's tending the sheep of his father-in-law, and God shows up unexpected, uninvited, but God shows up. He says, look, Moses, these people over here in Egypt, these are my people, and they're also your people, and they are slaves. You'll just see that we are always called to speak up for those who are disenfranchised. He said, these people in Egypt, they're slaves. They're my people, and they're your people. I want you to go and set them free. And Moses, who was, of course, the reluctant leader of God, goes to Egypt. It's kind of a long and involved story. We can't tell it all now, but most of you know it to some extent. He goes to Egypt. He sets the Hebrews free. They take off through the wilderness into the promised land. And from the very beginning, you get this, you understand the seduction that the Hebrews are under because Moses says, we're going to the promised land. To the promised land, and they believe that's where God is. They believe that God is in the promised land. So you understand the frustration. It's like a lot of things. Those kids from Thailand, the ones in the cave, Don't you suppose that after a day or two, they thought, oh, we're stuck, but they'll be here tomorrow. And then another day goes by, we'll be there. I read a book about the Chilean miners who were under there for, I don't know, months and months and months. It just is unbelievable. That's what happened. That's what happened to the Hebrews while they were in the wilderness. I think they thought, oh, 3 or 4 months, we'll get to the promised land. 6 months at the latest, we'll get to the promised land. So here they are, 30 years, 31 years, and they're still headed to the promised land. And they came to the conclusion that God had abandoned them. Because you see, they made the mistake of believing that God was at the end of the journey rather than being in the middle of the journey. You get it, don't you? If God is at the end of the journey, it means that God isn't necessarily near. God may be far off. But the story of the people in the promised land is the story of how God's not just at the end of the journey, the promised land, that God's right here in the middle of the journey, the good things and the bad things that are happening. So those of you that know the central story of the Old Testament, you know there came this moment when the Hebrews became terribly frightened and discouraged because they were hungry and they were thirsty. And they turned to their leader Moses. They said, take us back to Egypt. At least we had bread in Egypt. This is the conclusion that they arrived at. They thought it's better to live without God in Egypt with food than it is to live out here in the wilderness without food and without God. Are you getting this? In the middle of the wilderness, when we feel stressed, when everything's going wrong, when we can't see the future, when things are falling apart, we believe we're experiencing the absence of God. They said, if God's going to be absent, we might as well be back there in Egypt where at least we were slaves. Yes, we were slaves. It was a terrible life, but at least we had bread. God said to Moses, these hard-headed people, they don't understand that I'm with them here in the wilderness every single day. He said, we'll teach them that. Tell them that when they wake up in the morning, there's going to be manna. There'll be bread on the ground every day. In the evening, quail. They will be fed every single day. But you tell them if they try to slip some into their bedroll or into their suitcase, try to save it for tomorrow, it won't be any good. What was that other than God teaching God's people that God is near? That God's not far away, that God's not necessarily just in the promised land. That God is here on the journey, on your journey, on my journey. Sometimes it's a joyful journey. Sometimes it's terribly painful and difficult. This is the central story of the Old Testament. It is the central story of our understanding of the faith. That God is here, God is near, but only one day at a time. We're wired. As human beings, we are wired. There's something in our brain or there's something about our collective memory. We are wired to believe that the promised land is someplace in the future. We grew up hearing that story. Most of us grew up hearing that story more than we heard the story of faith. All of those stories, the fables, the fairy tales, it would start off in a really, really sweet way, and then came the middle of the story in the fairy tale, and awful things were happening. There was a wicked witch, or there was an evil king, or an evil queen. Terrible things happening. This is how most of us got our religion, isn't it? This is how most of us, we were raised to believe that, yeah, in the middle, terrible things happened. But in the end, what happened? Everyone lived happily ever after. And look, that's the way our brains are wired to think about life. And in many ways, it is exactly the truth of the gospel that you and I believe. In the end, everybody lived happily ever after. That's the vision of Revelation, isn't it? You look up 21st, 22nd chapter of Revelation, and the garden is restored, and peace comes to the earth, and God reigns, the reign of God forever. Of course, everybody lives happily ever after. But in the faith that we practice, God is not absent in the middle of the journey. The spiritual journey, the journey that you and I are on, is the journey where if we could only understand it and experience it and live it, we know that God is near. In the midst of the traffic jam, when the horn is blowing, when life at work gets tough, when the relationship with your spouse seems impossible, when the child or grandchild seems to have wandered so far, they'll never come home, God is near. That's the faith by which we live. The four words that can transform your life and mine: God is near.